Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Several central Pennsylvania colleges and universities have new leadership this school year. Not only are these institutions important to the future of thousands of students that are enrolled, but they also play a vital role in their communities. Over the next several weeks, we'll meet new college presidents on Smart Talk. We begin today with the new president of Millersville University, Dr. Daniel Wilbaugh. Dr. Wilbaugh, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number is 1-800-729-7532. And throughout our conversation will not just focus on Millersville University, but higher education and relationship to the community. A lot of questions surrounding Millersville and the Lancaster County community, central Pennsylvania as well. So you could ask one of those questions, 1-800-729-7532. You know, I don't want to make this sound like a job interview, Dr. Wilbaugh, but tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you came from Washington and Lee University in Virginia.
Thank you very much, Scott, once again. Yes, I was born and raised in Ghana, West Africa. I came to the United States after I did my bachelor's degree in Ghana, and I started my master's degree at the University of Akron in Ohio. After I got my master's, I went down to Georgia to do my PhD, and then I did a two-year postdoc in microbiology. That's my background. So after that, I started my career as an assistant professor at Towson University. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was called Towson State. After I got tenure, I became department head and then recruited to James Madison as an associate dean. I was there for 3 years as a dean, and I was about to go on to a deanship when the president invited me to work with him as his assistant. I did that for 4 years and then went down to Florida as the associate provost. After 2 years there, I came back to the Shenandoah Valley to Virginia Tech as the vice president and dean for undergraduate education. Couple of years after that, I was appointed a deputy provost, which I did for 3 years before going to Washington and Lee as the provost. So my career has taken me on a journey in at least three different states. So I have that's two daughters, an older one who lives in Philadelphia with two grandkids, and then a younger daughter who lives in Blacksburg. And I'm very delighted to move to central Pennsylvania. It has some similarities with the Shenandoah Valley where we lived for quite some time. And I'm looking forward to becoming part of our community.
So this is the first time that you've been president of an institution. You obviously have an extensive background, but what prepares someone like yourself to be president of Millersville?
Okay. Well, the presidency in higher education at the moment, and there are so many routes to get there. We have the traditional academics who go up the administrative ladder to become presidents like myself, because I was a faculty member, then became a dean, became a vice president. But there are currently other routes by which one can be prepared to become a president. We talk about the non-traditional president who may, in most cases, come from the corporate world. But in my case, because I went through the academic route, I had an opportunity along the way to be mentored by other academic administrators. In terms of preparation, I think it comes down to you have to have a very good background in your own scholarship. Be basically should have published, you know, be known in your discipline. That actually is one of the first steps to have that credibility as an academic. And then you get into administration. In most cases, some do it by accident, others do it by design. I would say mine was by accident because
it sounded that way, yeah.
Because I was actually elected by my colleagues after there was a failed search in the Department of Biology at Towson. And they basically went to the dean and told the dean that they think I can be the department head. That is what got me into academic administration. But even with that, I didn't give up my scholarship, because as I went up the ladder, I still work with students in terms of research in my lab. And my wife, who happens also to be a professor, she has a PhD in molecular biology, and I share the lab. so we could co-mentor students. And that was very helpful in me becoming an administrator, because I had to work with not only students, but also with that's the faculty members, the staff. And that really is something that every academic administrator needs to be prepared to do, because internally you work with a very wide array of people. And then to be able to rise up to the executive level, you should also develop some skills in working with people outside the university. So in my case, I ended up serving on various committees outside, as the professional committees, and also serving as the member or a chair of National Science Foundation, National Institute of Health, USDA panels. All that gives you skill set that broadens your experience to be an executive in higher education.
Your background, as you've just described, is in science, teaching biology. I don't know, how often does someone with a science background academically rise to the level of president? I don't know. Often I don't hear, and maybe it's just my observation, that someone who has an extensive science background rises to that level.
Actually, Scott, it's not unusual to see scientists who end up, to this level. For example, if you look at some of the presidents around the nation, if you look at, MIT, or you look at some of, the Ivy Leagues.
Well, that I understand.
Exactly. But even in the comprehensives and the liberal arts universities, you tend to see that's academics who have backgrounds in the STEM area, chemistry, biology. So it's not uncommon to see them. I wouldn't say it's the easiest way to become, president. But if you have the leadership skills, which is very, very important, no matter your discipline, you still have a chance of, being able to rise to this level.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you about your vision for Millersville in just a moment. But when science is obviously something near and dear to you, and we know that the STEM subjects, and we hear about it often with young people in the high school, but we know that on the higher education level, it's very important too for the careers and the jobs for tomorrow. Someone with your background, do you have any plans for Millersville University when it comes to the STEM, the science, technology topics?
Actually, I do have some thoughts that I can share with you. I would say I'm a microbiologist, and I'll be glad to talk about the details of my specific interests, but I don't think that would be very relevant here. But what I foresee is, in this day and age, whatever we do is impacted by technology. And technology invariably starts with science in the STEM area. So when I look at Millersville at the moment, we really have a lot of opportunity to develop some areas in that STEM areas that would help produce the workforce that is needed in central Pennsylvania. Let me give you just two examples. The first one has to do with data science. As we sit here now, if we have a cell phone or that's any kind of device, we are generating data. Now, this data is being collected somewhere, and that data then can be used, then packaged to send different advertisements to us as a way of getting us to buy something. This means that we have so much information out there that currently has to be curated and also used for good reasons, for good purposes. And so data science is a whole area at the moment that is coming up, and data analytics is impacting our life in whatever we do. You buy a new car, it has a navigational system, there's a voice in it that is telling you where to go. You visit Costco once, the next thing you know, the next time you say you're going to the store, it's directing you to Costco. It's because this data is being collected. And my goal is to work with our students and the faculty at Millersville to start thinking about programs and how to collect and analyze this data. Some institutions are way ahead in terms of doing that already. But I think what would be most relevant to us in our area has to do with health administration and health analytics. Recently, Lancaster was voted as the number 3 best place for retired people in the US. We have quite a large population of retirees in that area. Health is an issue. And I believe that if we have a program that will collect data about people and help you know, improve their health status, that would definitely be great. So data analytics, you know, health analytics is two areas that I think we can focus on as an institution.
You said, as you were describing these two examples, that being used for good purposes. Often we have heard that it wasn't used for such good purposes. Privacy is a big concern for many people. As you say, we are bombarded with information. So how do you make sure that these analytics are used for purposes that improve people's lives or make people's lives better?
Well, actually, that is something that is also a wide area for potentially, you know, students going in to get skills in cybersecurity. As we know now, whenever you have a new technology, initially the intention is to benefit mankind, but ultimately someone will find a way to use it for some ulterior motives. So as we develop these programs in data analytics and health analytics, it's very, very important for us to also have a parallel track where we have those who will be monitoring how these programs are being developed to be able to come up with the right results. We can't prevent someone sitting in his or her basement thinking of doing something wrong with, you know, the data that is going to be collected. So that actually produces a new industry, which, and I mentioned, cybersecurity is an area that, you know, we should pay attention to, because the data is being generated, it's going to be curated. Now, how do we make sure that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands? That is where we can develop new industry or new programs of students for students who will be able to monitor these new technologies that are coming out.
Mm. Why do they always do it in the basement? That's a rhetorical question. But so one of the big questions that I do have for you, Dr. Wuba, is your vision. What's your vision? I mean, you've touched on a few things here, but your vision for Millersville University.
That's a very good question. Often, the question is, what is the president's vision? And from what I know, the best presidents often don't come in with a preconceived notion saying, this is what I want the institution to be. But the best approach to it is to work with the community, meaning the faculty, staff, alumni, friends of the institution, to develop a vision for the institution. So my vision, I have some thoughts that I can share with you briefly, but my goal at the moment in developing the vision for Millersville is to actually listen and make sure that I know what we aspire to be as a community, both internally and externally, and out of that, develop the clear areas where we all want to move. So at the moment, I've developed, and we are working on a listening tour. I'll be going to every department, I'll be talking to staff, and also meeting with alums, you know, in what I call hearing tours, to listen to them. I'll bring that, gather that information, bring it back to campus, and then working with a task force or a committee, we will develop these strategic areas that we will all move as a university. Interestingly, Millersville is blessed to be in the position where our self-study for reaccreditation is taking place this year. So we currently have two committees. One is a strategic advisory committee, and the other one is the Middle States Self-Study Committee, and they have an overlap. I believe that through the self-study, we will come up with some areas that we would like to improve and areas where we have strengths that we can build on. That is how our vision will be generated. And once these two committees finish their work, we'll be able to come up with a clear strategic plan that involves input from the entire community, and we will have them in specific groups that we can then work on. But broadly speaking, one of the areas that I'm keenly interested in is to work to improve our graduation rate and our retention rate. Currently, Millersville has a four-year graduation rate of 38%. If you look at just the number 38, it seems it's low, but nationally, the average graduation rate is 36%.
In 4 years.
So we are just above that. That is not, for me, acceptable. I would like us to improve that. In Millersville, when you look at our 6-year graduation rate, it jumps to 62%. So that 2 years adds a lot of time for students to graduate at a higher level. What I would like to see us do is to improve our four-year graduation rate, maybe move it up to mid-40s and gradually get above 50% of our students graduating. As we do that, our six-year rate will also go up. So that is an area that I would like to really work on. But it all starts with retention rates, which the first to second year retention rates often are indicators of how well, you know, an institution does in terms of the graduation rates.
Well, how do you retain students? I mean, what are the reasons? And then the second question, or the follow-up question to that is, why does it take students 6 years to graduate rather than four?
Several factors account for students graduating in 4 years and 6 years instead of 4 years. And I'll just give you a few of those. One is the preparedness of the students before their preparation before they arrive, you know, at the college campus. Some students come from high schools with some deficits that then we have to remediate, you know, while the student after they arrive. That by itself can add time to, you know, how long they spend in finishing their programs. Secondly, we also have instances where students at times don't make up their mind early enough. So they come in, they will try several majors, and they decide maybe in the junior year that, oh, this is what they want to do. I've seen students actually change their majors in the junior year. That also tends to add additional time to when they graduate. The third piece is the costs, because there are some students who initially will come in with that they have a loan. And some of, especially first generation and some underrepresented students are very averse to, you know, getting in debt before they graduate. So some students will come in a year or two, they step out to go and work part-time, and then they come back. So I call it more of a pathway for these students. And if you look at Millersville's numbers going from 38 to 62 within 2 years, it tells us that most of these students can actually graduate earlier if we lower the barriers or the challenges that keeps them there past the four-year period. And the last reason why students tend to stay a bit longer is we do have some students who basically enjoy their time on the campus that they rather stay longer than, you know, leave and go and they go
to the workforce. I
think
we all know some of those people, yeah.
So that accounts for that. But overall, I think our goal is to work to, you know, decrease the time to degree.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today is Dr. Daniel Wuba, who is president of Millersville University. This is his first year as the president of Millersville. If you have a question or a comment, we're talking about higher education in general, but Millersville specifically. We'll be talking about a lot of the things that Dr. Wuba has already brought up. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number is 1-800-729-7532. I wanted to follow up a little bit on the three things you mentioned, reasons why some students don't graduate in 4 years. But let's start with being prepared as a first-year student. Do you have any idea what the percentage is of first-year students, and I don't know, maybe it's not just Millersville, but even nationally, that need remediation, that there are some things that they are not prepared for in leaving high school?
At Millersville University at the moment, about a fifth, about 20% of our students coming in need some kind of remediation help for them to be able to pick their classes. And we actually have a very good program now that has been helping our students who at times need this help. And we have a PSSI program in the Pre-Scholars, you know, Summer Institute. We bring in these students. And just to clarify, at times, these students are not necessarily not prepared because of academics, but just the skills that said that they need to be able to succeed as undergrads. So, for example, how they manage their time, you know, how they take notes. Those are skills that can...
Soft skills. Soft skills. A lot of people prefer from that, yes. So, you know, obviously... there needs to be a partnership. I don't know if the partnership's the right word or not, but a good relationship between the K through 12 education system and higher education. What's the solution? How could students leaving high school be better prepared for that first year of college?
I think there are a number of ways that this can happen. We at Millersville, actually, we have a high school adjacent to our campus, Penn Manor, adjacent to us. And I know that, you know, our faculty members, actually, there are some classes that they go to offer at Penn Manor. So this partnership should be such that there will be programs that will enable high school students to get the taste of how the college life will be. And also, we have instances where we have these high school students, they can take classes at the university level. That's dual enrollment. No, it's one way by which you can prepare students for them to be able to succeed, you know, in college. If as an 11th grader or as that's a senior, a student gets a chance to take a college level course, that by itself can help the student to be able to actually do well when they enter college. And for these to take place, there should be good collaborations between the school district and the universities. And in this case, I'm talking about the public universities. It's so important to make sure that the faculty members know what these students are being taught in high school before they get to college. Interestingly, when you look at certain disciplines, and I'll talk about biology in this case, the textbook that is used on some campuses for freshman biology is the same textbook that is used in the high school. But the question then becomes, how do these two institutions talk to each other? The faculty members at the university and the teachers at the high school, how do they work together to ensure that these students are not getting repetitive information, but rather they are building the sequence for them? So these one-on-one interactions between faculty and teachers in high schools would be helpful. And some schools have been able to do that. In Millersville, at Lancaster, that we actually hold a breakfast where we bring in school superintendents from the area to get a chance, you know, for us to know the sort of things that we need to ensure that these students can seamlessly transfer to our campus. And the summer program that I mentioned too is one way by which, you know, we can lower the barriers for our students or prepare them to succeed.
And we're going to talk about those other two examples you gave, talking specifically about majors and cost in just a moment. Let's take a phone call from Beth in Camp Hill. Beth, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a question for the doctor. I wondered what he thought about making research by computer more accessible to alumni, particularly retired alumni. The same research options that undergraduates would have, maybe with some kind of a fee attached.
Do you know what? Go ahead, doctor.
Thank you for your question. We are very blessed in the Lancaster area to have a very good relationship, a high number of retirees who have moved there. And we have programs such as the SCORE program, that the Service Corps of Retired Executives that we partner with. Adult learning, if you look at our campus, we have four colleges. And one of them is the college, the graduate college, which also has adult learning there. And we currently actually have a partnership with Willow Valley Community, where there are 2,600 retirees. And we work with those who are interested in taking classes at Millersville. And you'll be probably be interested to know at the moment that if you are above 62 years, you know, you can actually take class at Millersville without paying for it. So we have those opportunities for those who are interested in taking classes on our campus.
But Beth, I want to follow up a little bit. Are you talking about specifically taking classes or just having access to research?
Having access to research by computer, older people tend to be less mobile, but many have a whole lifetime of experience. And the doctor had mentioned data mining. And, of course, any research that was done on the Internet would be data mined and become a part of the general knowledge pool. So I can only see society as benefiting from this, particularly if the people having access to this, which is the same research opportunity that undergraduates universally have through our colleges, it can only help us to increase our knowledge at a greater pace.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you very much for your call. Dr. Homa?
That's a very good point, you know, and that's something that I would like to talk to our faculty to see if we'll be able to develop, you know, those opportunities. I would assume that in this case, the adult learners or the older people who want to take part in these research experiences have access to their own computers and can be on the network. And there will be other factors that we need to consider, because in collecting this data, there will be privacy issues, data management issues. And before we can involve the adult learners in this program, they have to be trained, you know, the same way we will train our undergraduate students to be able to manage and handle this information. But I would like to pursue that. I'll talk to our faculty to see if that's something that we can expand or provide to people in the local area.
You know, what Beth's question reminds me of, though, is that today's student is not the traditional graduate high school, next year you're on to college. That there are many, and still referred to as non-traditional students, that have, you know, taken classes once they've had children, had families, or been out of school for a few years. I'm curious as to how Millersville reaches out to those kind of students.
Scott, that is a question that at the moment I've actually posed to my senior leadership, and it is part of my own learning process to know what we have in place. Recently, I read somewhere that about 37% of adults in central Pennsylvania who started college were not able to complete them. So they have some credits. Now, what we call those people are those who are coming to complete their degrees. So degree completers, that's what we call that cohort of individuals with enough credits to continue, but because of their lives, you know, they can't do that. And that's what our adult learning program was actually established for. That's to help people who can't come to the campus full-time, but can take classes online at their own pace and be able to complete their program. So I'll give an example of one that you're right in terms of not all students are the traditional 18 to 22 years. But this is an area that we are working on. This example has to do with what we are currently working on with Thaddeus Stevens. We know that students who go to Thaddeus Stevens in most cases are trained in the vocational areas or technical skills. And there are some of these individuals, when they graduate, they would go on to that they'll start working as their first step. But we realize that there are some of them who might be interested in being entrepreneurs or setting up their own companies, or they would be interested in getting four-year degrees. So we are currently in conversation with them to develop a two-year path for them, that once they finish Thaddeus Stevens, we have a series of online classes that they can take at Millersville, so that 2 years after, you know, they start the program, they will get a baccalaureate degree from Millersville University. I think that kind of program will be available to those who are interested in going back to get their baccalaureate degrees. And our adult learning program is, it's flexible enough that if anyone is interested in going back to get their four-year degree, we have faculty mentors who would work with them to design their program so that they can continue their lifestyle and be able to take classes online and to get their baccalaureate degrees.
That sounds like a wonderful program. Thaddeus Stevens School of Technology just recently, as you're probably aware, ranked as one of the top 10 in the nation. And as you said, those who maybe want to be an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. it's something we need many more of. That sounds like a wonderful opportunity. I want to get back to some of the other things that you had mentioned, though. Students, and you said you know of even juniors who have changed their majors. I'm curious, how do you, now this is like an overarching question, but how does an institution like Millersville, a public university, prepare students for the jobs of tomorrow?
Actually, that's an area that I think Millersville is going to distinguish itself. We already are doing it, but we're going to do it better. And the way to address that question is to look at a recent survey that was done of, you know, Fortune 500 CEOs. And the question that they were asked is, what do you look for in a new graduate who would fit into your that's your organization, or what are the characteristics of a graduate that you think would be a good employee? And they listed four main areas. You know, after the survey, about 500 of them, when you distill it down, it came to four main skill set. And some of them said, we don't really care about the discipline. All we care about is if they have these four skills.
So in other words, they don't care about the major.
Yes, there are some said, okay. We don't care about your major. You know, if you have these four skills, we can bring you into our organization and work with you to be able to be the best employee. And these are what we call the four C's. The first one is your ability to communicate, both verbally and written form. The second C has to do with creativity. They want individuals who have demonstrated, graduates who have demonstrated that they can be creative. The fourth C has to do with collaboration. Be able to work, you know, as part of a team. And the fourth C is critical thinking, that if there is a problem, you can analyze it and come up with solutions. And most of them said, if a graduate can demonstrate that he or she has these skills, then no matter their major, they can take them into their company and then get them acculturated to the company to be very good employees. Those are the skills that liberal education provides, and that liberal arts education. And that is what Millersville is all about, providing students with this liberal arts education that then would help them to succeed, whether it's teacher education or in biology, philosophy, history. That is what they need. And when you ask most of these Fortune 500 CEOs and you look at their backgrounds, a fair amount of them didn't even go to business school. They didn't major in business as undergrads. They majored in history, philosophy, the social sciences, or some of them in the natural sciences. But because of these four C's that they have, they've been able to rise in the corporate world. And that's what they're looking for.
But the four skills that you mentioned, some people have those skills naturally. There are people who can communicate well without having to be taught how to do it. There are some that are more creative than others. How do you teach someone? How do you get someone to acquire those skills?
That is where the curriculum comes in, that we should have a curriculum that is designed in such a way that as students take these courses, they get to acquire the skills that we talk about. Let me give you an example. In the case of creativity, often when we talk about scholarship or research in the broadest sense, we think about graduate students because we believe they are the ones who are adding knowledge to a particular major or a discipline. But undergraduates at a place like Millersville currently have an opportunity to do research with faculty members, or if they are in the humanities, they are in the fine arts, they get to create their own work, their own body of work. That is how you teach them creativity. You incorporate it into the curriculum. So if it is a requirement, students would rise up to the challenge. And we do have this Made in Millersville program, which was started 5 years ago. It started the first year, there were less than 100 students. This past spring, there were 400 plus students in all disciplines who were showcasing their work. And this is work that is original, that they did. I think that, so the curriculum and the campus should provide students the ability to hone their skills in any of these forces. And this is just an example of how to enhance or to teach creativity. Provide a curriculum that would enable them to hone their skills in that particular area.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today is Dr. Daniel Wuba, the new president of Millersville University. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Wuba, when students are being prepared for, you know, those four C's that you mentioned, the three C's, that makes a lot of sense to a lot of different people. But when you get down to it, there are people who say, why did you choose that major? Is that really preparing you for a career that is in demand today? Are there majors out there? Now, I know Millersville offers 100 different undergraduate programs. Are there majors, maybe at Millersville, other schools that maybe should go away and others that should be added?
That is a question that, as you know, an institution, we do ask ourselves quite often. But I think what we've done is, instead of saying a major has to go away, what we are currently doing is finding ways by which we can bring aspects of different majors together to create interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary programs. And I'm very proud to say that Millersville is one of the few institutions in the Commonwealth that has a vehicle that allows different majors to come together to form. It's under a multidisciplinary studies program. So, for example, when you say majors should go away, I would not ascribe to say that majors should go away, but we need to encourage and foster that collaboration from the majors. And that is what the students would need in the future for the workforce. The problems that they're going to face are such that having good knowledge or having a background in one major will not be enough for you to contribute. So we have, under our multidisciplinary studies program, for example, we have, you know, sports business, we have digital journalism, where you have faculty from communication, English, theater, and the fine arts working together to create, you know, this is a whole discipline. So students would benefit from aspects of all of these three areas, four areas. A student can't take 12 years to get degrees in those areas. So we don't want these majors necessarily to go away, but we have to morph them in a way that will give the students the skills that they need to address the challenges they will face in the future.
You know, when I hear stories of students who say that, well, this was my major, it took me a year, 2 years, and I couldn't find a job in my major. That sounds as if that's a person that is, you know, too focused on one thing and not looking at the big picture. Versatility, and this kind of goes back to what you talked about with teamwork, cooperation, that versatility, being able to have a lot of skills and not just a few, is very important to an employer today.
That is very true, Scott. And that is what the employers are looking for. Okay. If you have a major in, let's say, English, or you have a major in biology by itself, at the moment, most students realize that, you know, having that major by itself will not serve you well, to not make you competitive in the job market. But these students have found a way, in most cases, to make themselves employable by being versatile. So you see students majoring in biology and then maybe minor in computer science. This student will be a good candidate for a job in any kind of, you know, computer firm, or even in working in agriculture. Just those two skills together would enable them to be more competitive than just majoring in biology. Then you look at, you know, the future as a whole. I believe that skills from the different majors coming together is what is going to be used to solve the problems. And these multidisciplinary or interdisciplinary programs that we are developing are really designed in response to what the job market is asking for. So we have partnerships with employers in our local area who tells us that, oh, we need someone with this skill set. And that is what helps drive the kind of programs that we are developing at Millersville. So that is going to be critical. And I will encourage any undergraduate students now who are looking at just one discipline to really think carefully about broadening their background, because that is essential for the future to be able to compete in the job market.
Let's move on to cost. And this is one of the big issues, one of the big challenges for many students out there. I see tuition, room and board at Millersville is around $26,000 this year. And compared to a lot of other institutions, that's probably a bargain for many. But still, it's $26,000 a year. We know that there are many, many students who are leaving with a four-year degree that have a lot of student debt. In fact, there are those who say that this is the next great bubble in this country, that you have people who have so much debt from going to college that they can't buy a house. They, you know, it restricts their way of life. What do we do about this?
As a president, one of the issues that keeps me up at night is, you know, to find ways to reduce costs for our students, that investing in higher education, you know, shouldn't saddle our graduates with so much debt that they can't get the benefit of, you know, the four-year education. If you look at the cost structure at the moment of that's almost every undergraduate program, you have the tuition piece, and then you have the fees, and you know, including room and board, and that's other technical fees that come with it. You mentioned rightly that for $26,000, that's for in-state students at Millersville.
Right, $36,000 for out-of-state.
For out-of-state, it's a bargain compared to, you know, students who will go to a private school and pay $47,000, you know, up to $50,000 per year. To reduce this cost, what I think we can do is to increase our advising very well, so that, because advising means the students come in, you help them figure out what they really want to do within the 4 years, so that you can decrease the time to degree. Most of the costs for students tend to come up after the fourth year, because if, you know, these students really plan their schedules well, we actually have students who graduate in 3.5 years and not 4 years. So what we need to do is to find ways to put students on the pathway so that they can graduate in a shorter time, meaning we have to make sure that the courses are being delivered at the right time, the students are taking the courses in series, they are making up their minds, you know, very early. And then, so the cost structures are there, and one will say, why are the costs going up? In most cases, it is because of so many external factors. If you think about the compliance issues, the regulatory issues that a university has to currently address, in most cases, it's way higher than it used to be. We have to have a Title IX. We have to have, you know, that's on the campus, the counseling services, the wellness programs that we have to support our students. Those are all cost factors that have increased that's the need for us to be able to, you know, cover them by increasing our room and board. So that's it's a challenge for us. It's not something that we can easily, you know, address by just, you know, using a magic wand. So I try in my interactions with my cabinet, I always make them aware that if, you know, we look at our budget as we have it now, any new cost that we come up with should be such that we can find ways to cut somewhere, if possible. And that is the kaleidoscope thinking, that it's not going to be easy to do that. I know that. But we are very conscious of the cost that, you know, these students have to come up with. Now, another way to address it, which I'm very keenly interested in, is to increase the number of grants and scholarships that we make available to students. Because there are some students who, by virtue of being able to get grants and scholarships, are able to reduce their cost by the time they graduate. Some students graduate with almost minimal, you know, debt or loans. So if, as an institution, we can provide more scholarships and more grants, I think that will help.
Let's take some emails here, listener emails. I was part of the first generation of my family to go to college. I did not graduate in 4 years, in part because I was not told there were classes that were only offered in the fall or the spring. I had to stay longer to take specific classes I needed to graduate because there were no alternative classes. Also, I did not know that when I was failing a class, I should drop it before it showed up in my GPA. I think counseling for students who are part of the first generation of college students and their family needs to be more intensive and aggressive to increase graduation rates and decrease the time to graduate. She says that, I'm saying she, I don't know why I think it's a woman, but he or she says, I ended up graduating after 5.5 years, but because I didn't understand the terms of a loan I took, I was unable to keep my diploma for about 8 years. So, you know, there are some circumstances here that maybe a lot of people go through.
I agree. And actually, that is what I referred to earlier in terms of advising the students very early. You know, it's very important to provide the students the information to make the right decisions. And that is where at times we fall short, not giving them the information early on to know that, you know, if you take these courses in sequence, you know, this is how long it takes you to graduate. And I mentioned the issue of offering our courses at the right time and appropriately. If a student is advised and he or she knows that the course is offered only in the fall or in the spring, the student will be able to fit it in their schedule in such a way that they will be able to take it at the right time.
But how does that happen? How did that happen in the past?
Well, in the past, I think you mentioned the issue of students not having the information. We now have systems in place, such as we have an alert system in place, where we have advisors who are keeping an eye on how students are performing. And we don't wait till the middle of the semester to alert that's the faculty member or to bring the student in to have a conversation with them. So we have an office of an academic advisement, and we follow these students. We track these students to make sure that they don't go too far, that you know we can't pull them back. And so the question that was posed, that they had to wait till the end of the semester before they found out that they were failing, we are trying to avoid that by making sure that we identify these students early and bring them in for help. And we also have peer tutoring that we currently provide. We provide several services that we are currently telling students about during orientation. We make them aware that if you're having difficulties in the class, you know, you shouldn't struggle by yourself. We have peer tutoring system that is working very well at Millersville. If you reach out, there'll be somebody who will help you. And those who don't reach out, our academic advisors actually reach out to them and say, look, you took this particular test and you got a C or D in it. We think you need help here, and we'll refer you to a tutor who can help you. So I at times call it intrusive advising, but we have to do it in order to prevent such situations from happening.
I have another email from Kristen in Fayetteville. Says, I work at a university and we too have difficulty retaining students and getting them to graduate in 4 years. Increasingly, the issues we see are beyond our control or expertise, such as significant mental health struggles and personal or family issues and illnesses. The parents of our students are older than in the past, and we've had a large number of students who lost a parent while enrolled, often causing delays and leaves of absences. What do you see? What can be done to help mitigate these situations?
Well, these student life issues are a challenge that we often have to find ways to address on case-by-case basis, because the examples that she gives, you know, are definitely those that we've also seen at Millersville.
Mental health struggles?
Actually, we are seeing an increase in students coming in with mental health challenges, and that, you know, we actually have some students who come in and we have to refer them to the counseling center where they have to go for medications on a regular basis. Okay, we are seeing more and more of those students coming in, and I think it's just part of society at large currently changing. There was recently an article talking about the increase in students who need this additional mental health care. So that's something that we see happening. And our role is to just make sure that we know and identify these students and provide them, you know, with assistance they need early.
Another question along the same lines, what about making higher education available to those traditionally not admitted, such as students with intellectual disabilities?
I would be proud. I'm very proud to say that Millersville has one of the best programs for, you know, those students who have intellectual challenges. We have an integrated studies program that is very inclusive. It is funded by the Department of Education. These students are integrated into our programs. That's, they live in the dorms with our students. They take classes with them. We provide them opportunities to actually feel that they are part of the campus, and they are. And our program actually is a model that currently other PASI institutions are coming to look at. We call it integrated studies. That is one way by which we can provide support for such students who have these challenges.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Wubb, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. We only have about a minute or so left. A lot of information here, and we'll be sure to have you back. And didn't even get a chance to talk about the relationship with the community. But in about 30 seconds or so, what kind of message would you like to leave with the Central Pennsylvania community about the time that you are president in Millersville?
Okay. First, thank you very much, Scott, for inviting me on your show. I've thoroughly enjoyed the opportunity to talk about higher education, specifically Millersville University. My message is Millersville University is an affordable place for anyone who is interested in getting the baccalaureate degree, and we have committed faculty and dedicated staff who are willing to work with our students as they come in, and we are looking forward to recruiting as many students as possible.
And that's another issue we want to talk about is recruiting students. We'll have that conversation again. Dr. Daniel Wubaugh, president of Millersville University, thank you very much for being with us today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Labor Day is this weekend. We're going to be talking with Rick Bloomingdale, head of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, also about with the author of a new book about liberty.